Workshopping an Honest Death.
Critiquing Howard's Story. I'm Brandon.
I'm Mary.
I'm Howard.
And the part of Dan will be played by a rowdy group of European soccer hooligans watching American football for the first time. And Eric James Stone joining us. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thanks for inviting me.
Last but not least is our friend Howard, who has written a story.
One of the things that we're going to talk about is the fact that what Brandon and Mary and Eric have read really isn't the whole story, and I am stuck and need help getting the characters and the plot and all the things to one of the possible endings I had in mind.
Yes. And the reason we decided to go ahead and do this with a partial story is that we know that this is something that happens to a lot of you. So one of the things we'll be talking about are the tools that you can use to get yourself out of this spot.
And I'm just going to lead the discussion, as I normally do with these. And as I often like to do, I can't remember if I did it with the other ones, I like to start with what's working whenever I'm doing a critique, because I don't want the writer to fix what's working.
So
let's talk about it. What did we like about this piece?
Well, one of the things I really liked is I liked the main character, the security guard. I like stories about people who are competent.
He was very competent, and it was shown me how competent he was. There was very little telling of that, and it was great.
So that way, you know, with a competent character, if they run up against something that's, you know, outside their competency zone, that creates some good conflict. And and this story, I think, has a really neat concept. And with the whole you know, immortality coming up thing, and then is it death? Is it aliens? What's it interfering here? So I really liked the concept there, and really wanted to know how it was going to end.
One thing I want to highlight that was working very well for me was the pacing.
Yes.
The way that you included your breaks really enhanced the sense of pacing. You had a nice little zing at the end of most of them. I was really engaged by this story all the way through.
I remember you actually cursing me when you got to the portion of the document that read Boneyard instead of...
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You had kind of indicated you weren't done, and I'm like, I'm hoping that means he just doesn't know what to do with the epilogue, like I, with my story. Yeah. We get the whole story, and then you're like, I don't know quite what to do.
Oh,
no, it just stops. And I'm like, Taylor! So.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked was the dialogue.
Yes.
Particularly because this is first person, and you're writing in... first person present tense.
Yep.
I like the immediacy that gives, and I also like the character interactions.
I feel like you picked the right tense, and it helps and enhances the story.
Okay, that by the way is very gratifying, because as I was first writing this, I remember thinking, you know, I used first person present tense when I was writing the horror stories for Space Eldritch. I should just go with the straight, you know, third person limited, and I could not find the voice for the characters, and so I changed characters. You know, the original pitch for this was that our protagonist was the CEO.
Okay.
But in that version of the story, he was just telling people what to do, and I thought, this is boring.
He's not,
he has to think a lot and do things, but all he's doing is telling people things. So I switched characters, and it still didn't feel immediate enough, and then I switched tenses, and that appears to be where my stride and the pacing of this story fits. So I'm glad that's working.
I remember brainstorming this way back when we did it, and even having brainstormed part of this with you,
I was still surprised by
stuff. I was surprised by things. It was working well.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what the ending is, even though we brainstormed the concept. I don't know if this is an alien or if it's actually death or if it's industrial espionage. And I love that about it.
Yeah.
Good. Why don't we go ahead and look at what's not working for the part that's already here, and then for the second half of the cast, we'll tackle this sort of larger issue of how do I end the story? Can you guys help me brainstorm an ending? This sort of thing, okay?
Okay.
For me, his seconds are too similar.
Okay.
I found that I was doing a fair bit of confusing of who else was there, and I think it has to do with speech patterns and also his assessment of where they fit into competency. because everybody seemed to be of equal competency levels.
And doing the same kind of things?
And doing the same kind of things.
But you know one thing that snapped when I learned that Mo was short for Muhammad? Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yep. That character suddenly became clearer in my head, and it's the whole Orson Scott Card thing, right? It's not necessarily that he was an ethnicity, but the fact that he was now a longer name, different from the other ones, and of a different... Like Orson Scott Card has said, when you're naming characters, try to make each name distinctive from the others in an interesting way.
And that was exactly what I was doing. With regard to their extreme similarity, that is always a problem with me, mm-hmm. with secondary characters during first and second drafts. Mm. And it's not until I have the story shaped the way it needs to be shaped that I can go back in and tweak the dialogue so that the character's speech patterns identify themselves.
Yep.
And you know, looking back at it at the start, you called him Muhammad the first time, but I wasn't into the story yet.
Yep.
And he was Mo for a long time. And then when you called him Muhammad again, that's the first time I grabbed onto Muhammad.
Yeah, and I completely missed. It wasn't sticky for me.
Yeah, it didn't stick for me either. The one that did stick for me was the.
Failalo.
Yes,
mm-hmm. The Polynesian name.
Yeah.
Talking about other things that didn't quite work, I'm going to try to start larger and go smaller.
Okay.
I've got some text-based things, but we'll get to those later. I felt that there were a couple of places where the narrative got a little clunky for me, and mm-hmm. one was there was some maiden butlering, and the scene between Woolrich.
Yeah.
Woolrich, that's right. We just had it right. Anyway, Woolrich and our protagonist chatting, and it was like, as you know, we hired this people, and there was a lot of information in there that as a reader I felt like I didn't 100% need.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a lot of that too, and I went through and I marked in the text. There were, for me, it was a lot of this stuff about how incredibly valuable this thing was. I'm like, you know what? I just need somebody to tell me this is valuable, and I do not need them to justify it.
Right. Yeah, and at the same time, in that same sequence, we have like our main character saying, "This is I'm thinking of stepping down or something like that," which didn't seem to work. I mean, I can understand him being shocked, but somebody needs to run security for this. They are going to need somebody.
Yeah,
and so it makes perfect sense that it would be him. That he's like, "Oh, I've just realized my mission parameters are much larger than I thought. This is a big deal. I'm overwhelmed." But there was this discussion of, I may need to quit, sir, or things like that. I'm like, is he going to hire someone better than you? I mean, I don't understand that interaction completely. It was part of this.
Okay.
Do we need all of this?
Yeah.
I've been presented with the characters like, tell me what I need to do. I'm going to then take the next few steps. And for him, finding out, wow, you're doing this awesome thing. Okay. I will have to deal with that. Felt like, anyway.
Okay. Yeah. I need to figure out how to fix that, because at least in the way I'm envisioning the further unfolding of the story, mm-hmm. The corporate espionage angle here is pretty important. And one of the principles behind protecting against corporate espionage is the value of the data and the value of the knowledge that the data exists.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't need to spend as much time on the page getting to that.
Yeah, okay. That's what I feel
okay.
too.
Yeah.
This was all good. And in fact, I even liked his conflict of, am I capable of handling this?
Okay.
I just felt there was way too much spinning of heels in this scene for me. I'm just giving reader response.
No, that's good. And what I want to make sure of is that that's not, that the thematic element isn't mm-hmm. the problem.
No.
It's the way I'm...
It is
over-narrating it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the one I highlighted, just to go back to this, is like, you know that inbound marketing team we created? Like, why do we need to know about what? They're doing market research? I think in just a couple of lines you could get across the idea of this is how we're going to profit on this with less back and forth. I don't know.
Okay.
I was bored there.
And likewise. It was because I got it really mm-hmm. early on.
Okay.
So I think, you know, I think like you need a third.
And you know, part of this is
you figuring out
is the world builders, mm-hmm. The world builders trap of, I have figured out how the CEO and the board of directors is structuring this to protect the data as well as they can. And I want to share how clever I am with my readers.
Yeah.
But you don't actually need it for the story progression.
Dialing back the sharing of the clever.
Mm-hmm.
Though, on another tack, I'm not sure if this is for everyone else or not, but I kind of want to know if you're going to mention, we've discovered the secret to immortality. Either to just say that or to go further and say, it means this and this or something. I don't know. Maybe this isn't the right time for it. But at the end, I'm like, what is it? All he says is we've introduced an order of magnitude increase in human longevity. And the guy's like, you're sure this is working? He says, yes. And the reader in me is like, what does it mean you're sure this works? You've only had 2 years. Does it mean our cells are no longer breaking down? I want a little line of proof.
Yeah, yeah. I had some plausibility problems with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So do I.
Now, you can say, you know, working in mouse studies or whatever, and, you know, the original mouse who got it 5 years ago, you know, is still alive or whatever. I don't know how long mice actually live.
Right. I just need something there. I don't need all the technobabble, but I need some. I need him to offer our guys some proof.
Yeah. Okay. If you said, you know, on a cellular level, aging is no longer happening.
Yes, and that right there, that tells me what kind of immortality this is.
Yeah. One of the places that I had a, you know, thing of disbelief was that his team, granted all hyper competent and everything, would just happen to carry around bugging equipment on them when they're doing a panic call.
Hmm.
I'm like, because he said it's about the size of a wall plate when he's talking about the transceiver. I'm like, having the camera dot, I can, okay, you know, maybe that's just in your bag all the time at a place where they don't want you to do any.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, they don't want you to do any of the stuff, but you, you know, where, what budget item was your secret bugging equipment on?
Mm-hmm.
So that I had some disbelief with that.
Wow, that's interesting. Now you say it pops in. With me, my problem with the bugging equipment was actually that I didn't have explained to me how it worked. You assumed I knew, and I'm like, when they went in and they're like, let's download the feed, and I'm like, what? Why? I thought you were going to go look at a screen and have someone watching that all the time, because that's how security footage works for me and things. Like, I was very confused at how.
That's funny. I also thought that there was going to be a, you know, we want live footage of him. I think, I mean, as fantastic as it is watching them be. The problem with this is that this is one of the places that you demonstrate their area of competence and how well they work as a team. So for overall story structure, important. But in terms of getting us the next information we need, all you had to do was to get rid of his prohibition against having the.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Well, and the other thing,
I'm going to go a different direction on this. I'm going to disagree. I really like that scene.
Oh, no, I like it too.
But I think it's just easily justified with simply having him say, I've been looking for an excuse to convince myself to bug his room for a long time now. And my men knew that. And I had not gone forward with it because bugging my employer is not something I do unless I have a good reason. Answer right there.
Yep, that solves it. One of the reasons that it is important to me is that on a story level, the reader needs to be shown that the interloper, you know, whatever he is, deaf, alien, whatever, the interloper already knows enough to know exactly where the camera is and to speak to the camera.
Right, and the camera is not the corporations; it is our individual security teams.
Exactly, and that
adds a lot of layers to this.
We're swiftly running up against the corner that I've written myself into.
Uh-huh. All right, so let's address the big problem, which is that our story that we were all really enjoying ends without an ending.
Ends in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Let me start by telling you. The intended structure of the story.
Okay.
All right. The intended structure of the story is the thing that happens next is that the easy logical answer for what's going on is that our protagonist and his team are for some reason spoofing everybody with their camera and their tricks, mm-hmm. And now this team has been brought into, you know, the full corporate secret, and so, and you know, the bodyguards are there in a room full of the company's brain trust, and honestly, the bodyguards are all armed.
Mm-hmm.
This is a situation the brain trust is probably very, very uncomfortable with.
Uh-huh.
And their logical action would be to, you know, immediately demand that the bodyguards disarm themselves.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes perfect sense. You know, it follows...
Well, if I were in this situation, I wouldn't do that. And if I were in this situation, I would play along immediately. If I suspected the bodyguard and say, wow, we need to do more research, investigation into this. Let's set up a better surveillance and see if we can do this. And then, once the bodyguards were gone, then I deal with it. I don't deal with it in the room right there
no.
with them.
Okay. Yeah, ditto.
Yeah. No.
When someone is in the room with you and they have weapons, you do not escalate.
Yep. Okay. And so I would try and... So that's... I think that...
Okay, you know what? That works even better. That actually works even better. Because what they want to do is they want to get the bodyguards out of the room.
Yes.
What the interloper wants to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the interloper is playing everybody.
Right. So, yeah. Okay.
That is something that needs to be made clear as the story unfolds. You know, mm-hmm. this is a story goal. That is what the interloper expects to have happen. Is that the bodyguards will be neutralized.
Right.
And then the interloper and his interloper buddies will materialize in the room and murder everyone.
Okay. Okay, so what you have right now is we are on our last act of this story.
Yes, we are heading straight
this
into...
This is climax right here.
Yeah, straight into the
okay.
last act.
What do you want the interloper to be?
Okay. The interloper is... And that's the other trick, is revealing this information in some way. The interloper is a species of alien that, you know, some sort of extra-dimensional alien that has found a way to feed off of energies released when people die.
Okay.
And they can materialize in our plane and kill us, but when they do that, they are exposed to us killing them back.
Okay.
Which is something that they don't want to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
If we just die naturally, well, that's awesome for them because then, you know, hey, free food. If we stop dying, they all starve.
Okay.
And so what they are trying to do is set up a situation in which they can maintain the status quo.
Uh-huh.
And for whatever reason, this to them seems like the best strategy.
Okay.
So I'm going to say that this is one of those scenarios where I feel like the bad guy's plan is too complicated.
Yeah.
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 The bad guy's plan of I need to convince them to not do this.
Mm-hmm.
The plan up to the point of...
Yes. Let's stop this.
Let's stop this.
That works
plan.
Great.
That plan all makes perfect sense. The let's kill all of these guys is really, really, forgive me, really, really stupid. Because if you can materialize anywhere,
yes, you just smash up all their computers and their equipment for one thing.
Yeah, and then you materialize in their bedrooms at night and kill them in their sleep.
Yep.
Yeah.
And smother them with pillows.
Yep. Or you materialize in their bedrooms while they're you know going to sleep and like I'm death. I can go anywhere you. Let's prove it. Go and lock yourself in any room you want. I will appear there. I can prove to you I am death. Now stop what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And see, that's one of the problems I'm up against because as I was trying to define for lack of a better term, you know, a power set.
Yes.
Why don't they just materialize everywhere? You know, what is the cost for them of materializing and dematerializing? It's got to be something beyond the risk of being seen.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to play with the fact that I did some research into death imagery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that they look like our classic representations of death is cool, but those classic representations of death are the last 800 years, 900 years. So either they haven't always been around, or this isn't what they've always looked like.
Yeah.
But once I start opening all of these cans of worms, the story gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's not what I wanted.
I think you were just fine saying they discovered our plane right about the time these depictions of death started appearing. Solves a lot of your problems there.
Yeah.
But the bigger problem is this one of how do we end this? Eric, you've been quiet for a bit, and you're really good at this stuff. Do you have any advice?
I think part of the problem is how is the main character going to be involved in solving this problem?
Okay.
Right.
And that is, I hadn't actually gotten around to describing that. The main character, the way I had imagined it is that, you know, either when he is disarmed or when he is, sent from the room, realizes that, oh, this is a scenario that somebody potentially has planned for. Those people are now all in that room without protection. And I've identified a threat that can materialize anywhere. I need to be back in that room.
Okay.
And
I think Mary's argument that they can materialize in the bedrooms at night is really a big deal for this story.
Yeah. So, which may involve, this may be one of those places where you actually have to rejigger your middle a little bit.
I know.
So it might be that this big scene that we have happening in the office, you know, gets shifted to bedroom.
Right. Or you can rejigger it so that, is that the right word? So that they're experimenting with this whatever's immortality stuff involves the creature's home plane. And so because of the science that's going on in this lab, this causes the creatures to manifest here. They have broken open this plane, so it's not just chemical. It changes your story a lot. But it gives you a connection there that then it's, you know, it's me. I'm looking for a magic system explanation. No. This is what I do. And so then fixing it is a matter of, if they can only manifest here, what do we do? Anywhere we're going to use this, they manifest, so we come up with a solution that causes that, you know, they can't manifest where we're doing our research or something.
Yeah, the original version of, and I say the original version of the ending that leapt to mind as the story, you know, came to me while I was driving, is that there is a fight. We realize that we can kill them. We somehow realize what their plan is and that their numbers have bloated hugely as our numbers have gone up because there's so much food. Now there are, you know, maybe millions of them who can appear at will and will need to in order to eat. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to give humanity immortality, and now we need to arm you because you're going to have to fight for it.
That's a cool ending.
It's a really cool ending. Mm-hmm. I just got to figure out how to get
That's
there.
A great ending. I like that.
But, you know, I mean, you don't have to, you don't actually have to work as hard to get there as, because all you need is, for that ending, is for your alien to appear and for there to be a firefight and for the alien to be killed.
Yep.
That's all you need. And you already have everything. Mm-hmm. In place. So you don't need to get your good guys out of the room. You don't need to do...
You need to do find out on the alien, have your good guy make the call that I'm going to go to his house at night. One of these things is going to show up and I'm going to shoot it in the head. Or something like Mary suggested earlier, which could be a valid way to go about this. I don't know. The discovery that needs to be made is these are aliens. This is what they do.
Yeah. One of the... If you want to do something with... You know, like have them look at the tape and be like, okay, so there's this thing occurs right before he appears.
Mm. Yeah.
This gives us a warning signal.
Right.
So rather than having our guy push a panic thing.
Was that UV scatter?
It was UV scatter. And you know, it's like, okay, and if UV scatter is happening, or, you know, look at the way he's looking at things. We suspect that he is only seeing in this spectrum or something.
Right. And the other thing that you have going on here is that it looked right at the camera, so it saw them. What can it see? What can it see? Could it see you because it was watching the room and it didn't get distracted by this thing? If you palmed the thing and stuck it, you know, somewhere unobvious, You know, if there were two cameras and it only spotted one of them, it tells you something about the alien that they can use. You need some sort of information about the aliens that can be exploited.
Yeah. And something that it is something in our main character's area of competence.
Yeah.
Which would be about threat assessment.
Right.
And one of the yeah. and you know, so if all of the scientists are looking at it and being like, well, you know, it's alien, da 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 da, and he's like, screw that, this thing doesn't have binocular vision. Mm. You know, or something.
Right.
Know. Well, but that's exactly what I'm trying to set up.
Right.
Is that he approaches this from threat assessment, mm-hmm. and they approach this. They come close
right.
for threat assessment when they're talking about, you know, game theory and trying to understand what the motivation would possibly be mm-hmm. for running this sort of a scam.
Right. I kind of like using the theme of the story. I kind of like the ending being him rushing in someplace and shooting the thing just because it matches the first scene so
yeah.
well.
You know, it could be, clearly this thing wants to talk to you. He's like, the only time this thing appears is when this room is empty or when Wolreich is in it by himself.
Right.
So let's right. set up a scenario where...
You could have a let's interview the alien scene where it's like, all right, we're going to talk.
I like that because part of what that can give me mm-hmm. is a scene break in mm-hmm. which... A lot of the discussion among the brain
yeah.
trust
mm-hmm. happens
doesn't
off stage.
Yeah, happens off scene. Uh-huh. As I talked to Mary about this in the commute from the airport, one of the problems I had is that I wanted all of this information to be revealed, and I wanted to show instead of telling. But I had too many characters. Mm-hmm. I had too much information for one character to have it all, and too many characters for a short story to work. But if I can roll that off screen. And have, you know, somebody say, all right, you know, Wolreich, we need you to be in the office by yourself. Here's the list of questions, and let's see if this thing comes in. And our hero has not told anybody that his threat assessment is, when this thing appears, I'm going to let Wolreich start talking, and then I'm going to kick down the door and shoot it in the head.
See if they die.
And see if it dies.
Okay. You can see this kind of story is really hard to feedback as a writer. It's a writing group, because it's not done. It's the same sort of problem we had with my story, where my ending was not the right ending, and we kept searching for it, and it was through the discussion that I get closer, but it is a tough thing to do, and we'll have to see how you
well,
go.
And this discussion has shown me that the corner that I had painted myself into is shaped differently than I thought it was, mm-hmm. and the part that I thought was a wall might be a door.
Writing an Honest Death by Howard Taylor.
It started with an idea. What if something perched, like a predator, between human beings and the afterlife? What if it fed on us as we went toward the light? What if that trip was actually dangerous? Then, of course, I began thinking about the ecology of such a system, and how these predators would die off if we made a leap forward in life extension. We brainstormed that idea a bit, and my first draft of the story had the CEO as the viewpoint character. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it began as follows. When the guy dressed as Death showed up in my office, I did what any sensible person would do. I punched the security button on my comm center and said, "Eviction, please!" I hadn't seen how the costume freak got in, but I was going to watch him leave. But the farther I got in, the less compelling the protagonist was. CEOs are very interesting people, but a large portion of their work involves thinking and then talking to people. So this story was going to end up being all dialogue and was feeling kind of expository. Kind of like, hey, I had this clever idea, and my CEO character is here to tell you about it. So I drafted it again, with the bodyguard as the viewpoint character. And suddenly I had solutions to several problems. First, I no longer needed to be as smart as a CEO who is managing a brain trust of expert futurists. Second, I now had somebody on screen who had a reason to have stuff explained to him. And third, I had guns. This recording contains a draft of the story which did not yet have its ending in place. We critiqued that version, and the upshot of all that stuff is that when I reached the end of that draft, I still had a problem. Specifically, I had no reason for the intruder to ever be honest. Nobody was in place who would explain my spooky death as a predator idea to the reader, and that had been the whole point of the story. And that, ultimately, was what led to the fix. I began working backward. Why would the intruder spill the beans? Possibly because it was injured and angry. But if it were injured, Why wouldn't it teleport home? Probably because its teleporting widget got damaged. So I wrote the intruder's closing dialogue. From there, I began reverse engineering the intruder's actual plan, which I'd already figured had to do with getting all of the right people in one room, but which didn't seem to scan correctly until I began thinking about just how expensive a war is. From there, I had two more hurdles to clear. The first was our main character's motivation, and the second was the order of events that led to him leaving the room. I'll start with that second one. The solution was simple. I grabbed a couple of blocks of text and moved them earlier in the story, and then wordsmithed the seams. The motivation, though, that was more difficult. Then, I remembered something a friend of mine told me about his decision to join the military and his disillusionment upon leaving. That rang true. And the moment I wrote the words "save the world" in Cole's mini biography, I knew I had the payoff for my ending. All I had to do then was tie it to something in the middle. And oh, a land war in Asia was waiting right there for me. The process I've described here seems like the sort of thing that should have taken about a week for 7,500 words. Thanks to the despair inherent in the realization that a story is broken forever and cannot be saved, but my friends need it for the anthology, and maybe I could write something else, but that's cheating, and this is so hard! Thanks to that, An Honest Death took about 18 months to go from idea to finished product. The writing sessions where I broke through the blocks and fixed things? Those lasted about 4 hours each.